From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris. The Supreme Court is heading toward the end of its term, and today the justices handed down decisions on a variety of topics, from high school athletics to sentencing for convicted criminals. In a decision that will affect student-athletes, the court ruled that coaches do not have a free speech right to violate recruiting rules. Here's NPR's Nina Totenberg.
The Tennessee Secondary School Athletic Association has rules much like interscholastic leagues in every other state in the country, rules that bar recruitment prior to a youngster's enrollment at a school. So when the coach at Brentwood Academy, a private school, wrote to a dozen eighth graders inviting them to a spring practice at his powerhouse school, the league slapped Brentwood with a 2-year suspension from playoff tournaments in basketball and football. Brentwood Academy then launched a legal battle that's lasted 10 years and taken 2 trips to the Supreme Court. The claim was that the league, acting as an arm of the state, had violated the coach's free speech right to talk to athletes. But today, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled unanimously against Brentwood. Writing for the court, Justice John Paul Stevens said, "High school football is a game. Games have rules, and it's only fair that Brentwood, having voluntarily joined the league, follow the rules." Brentwood's free speech rights are not absolute, said the court, and just as government can impose restrictions on what its employees can say, the league here can impose conditions on speech when it's necessary to managing an efficient and effective state-sponsored athletic program. "We need no empirical data," said the court, "to credit the league's common-sense conclusion that hard-sell tactics directed at middle school students could lead to exploitation, distort competition between high school teams, and foster an environment in which athletics are prized more highly than academics." Rick Colbert represents the Tennessee Athletic Association and its 370 member schools, 65 of them private. He says that a loss would have sent the wrong message to youngsters, created elite schools where star athletes are rewarded, everyone else gets the crumbs, and students come to believe that they are in school to play, not study.
We're talking about cherry-picking athletes. We're talking about having schools that are such superpowers through the recruitment of athletes that there is no longer any balanced competition. You know, you have haves and have-nots.
To prevent that, the rules bar certain kinds of recruiting, make athletes ineligible if they transfer without changing address, limit financial aid to those who need it, and set academic standards for athletic eligibility. Andrew McBride, who filed a brief on behalf of a private school organization, said today's ruling will strengthen the hand of athletic leagues in every state, and he thinks that's too bad.
Generally in our society, the more information you have, the better off you are. And here, information about what opportunities are available to athletes for secondary education is being cut off.
Now, dear listener, at this point in today's report on the Supreme Court, we could try to find some sort of segue to the question of what prison sentences should be imposed on convicted criminals. But finding a rational pivot is really impossible. Suffice to say that it's that time of year at the Supreme Court when the justices are moving inexorably towards the end of the term and grinding out an unusually large number of opinions each week about very diverse subjects. And so today's other opinion of interest involves what criteria are to be used in determining whether a prison sentence imposed by a trial judge is to be upheld on appeal. Is the sentence presumptively reasonable when a trial judge imposes a sentence that falls within the guidelines range set out by the Federal Sentencing Commission? Today, the Supreme Court said yes. Even though the guidelines are not mandatory, the appeals court may view the sentence as presumptively valid. The vote was 8-1, though only 6 justices agreed on the reasoning. Writing for those 6, Justice Stephen Breyer said that in enacting the federal sentencing law, the Congress envisioned both the sentencing judge and the commission as carrying out specific sentencing objectives, like proportionality and uniformity. The judge at retail, the commission at wholesale. And when they reach the same conclusion in a case, said Breyer, that double determination significantly increases the likelihood that the sentence is a reasonable one. Or as Ohio State University professor Douglas Berman puts it,
"You better win at the district court level, or your chances become slim or none to prevailing at any point."
The irony of the sentencing decision is that it came in a case that's nearly identical to that of Louis Scooter Libby, the vice president's former chief of staff. Like Libby, the defendant in the case was convicted of perjury and obstruction of justice. Like Libby, he had a career of government service and no previous crimes counted against him. And like Libby, he was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.